You're about to listen to a Second City Works presentation, brought to you in partnership with WGN Radio. Subscribe on your favorite podcast streaming platform or listen on WGNradio.com. And be sure to share.
The Second City is a world-famous comedy theater, and it got so famous because it has produced generation after generation of comedy superstars. That didn't happen by magic. Second City's improvisational pedagogy fuels great performance, and the same practices that have made stars of everyone from Bill Murray to Tina Fey can be applied for success offstage, at work, at home, and in the world. I'm Kelly Leonard, Vice President of Creative Strategy, Innovation, and Business Development at the Second City. This podcast is about collaborative conversations, discovering connections, and building a better future. This is Getting the Yes And.
I am so excited for this podcast and for you to hear it. I'm talking to Jenny Raymond and Julie Dumais Osborne. Jenny is the executive director of the New York City-based Harnish Foundation, and for over two decades has been driving the foundation's mission to advance gender equity. She has administered more than $12 million to support bold ideas, effective leaders, and creative communities. From investigating sustainable new models in journalism, to supporting courageous storytelling, to championing innovative solutions for the leadership development of women and girls, Jenny's on the forefront of truly creative philanthropy. In 2013, she founded the foundation's Funny Girls, a groundbreaking program that teaches leadership skills through improv to middle school girls. Julie Dumais Osborne is the vice president of the Second City Training Centers in Chicago, Toronto, New York, and even virtual. Prior to joining the Second City, Julie was the artistic and managing director of Toronto's critically acclaimed Bad Dog Theater Company for 10 years. She's an award-winning director, improviser, and educator. You're going to enjoy the pod. Jenny and Julie, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right. For listeners who may be new to Funny Girls or the Second City Training Centers, can you each briefly share who you are and the mission of your organization, what you do? Jenny, we'll start with you.
Sure. Thank you for laying it down before. I'm the longtime executive director of the Harnish Foundation. I've been there since 1999. And we've been long committed to gender and racial equity with a focus on women. And one of our areas of primary philanthropic investment has been women's leadership. And we've supported thousands of women in lots of different cohorts and programs. And the women were always like, this cohort's amazing. This program is fantastic. And I wish we'd done something earlier. So we decided to do something about that kink in the pipeline. And we developed Funny Girls. So as you said, it's a program that teaches leadership skills through improv comedy to girls third to eighth grade.
Great. Julie, talk about the training centers, because I mean, I know you've been on the podcast before, but we talked about your career, and I don't think we've really ever sort of dug into the training center itself and what that beast looks like.
It is a huge and beautiful beast, the Training Center. The Training Center is the division of Second City that brings improv training directly to people. So we teach comedy in all of its many forms. We teach writing, we teach acting, we teach stand-up. But our heart and soul is improvisation and the methodology through which we create art at the Second City. We take our pedagogical inspiration from Viola Spolin, often thought of as like the mother of Western improvisation. So the feminist roots of the Second City really align beautifully with Funny Girls. And Viola Spolin used the techniques of improvisation to facilitate play between children, immigrant children at Hull House in Chicago, working with Neva Boyd, back before Second City existed. So these folks did not have shared language, but the language of play is universal. And through that play, they fostered connection and confidence and discovery, communication. And that's something we still do now through classes for all skill levels, all ages, anywhere in the world, really, with a virtual training center.
Yeah, so the way this thing all happened is sort of classic in terms of Second City, which is like Kelly reads an article or a book and sends an email. That's like almost everything that we've ever done is that. So I don't even think I talked to Julie about this before I sent the email. So I sent Jenny, I sent this blind cold email to you sort of saying, hey, would you want to talk? I think I know the answer to this, but why don't you tell me why you said yes?
Oh my God. When you first reached out, I really thought I was being punked. I was like, I'm too young for this bucket list manifestation. Like, who's behind this amazing prank? But it turns out it really was you. Mm-hmm. And it's just been a long time dream to work with Second City, especially with your roots in education, as Julie was just saying, and your just incredible community of trained educators, and obviously the reputation of your alumni as well. Mm-hmm. I should say alumni, but yeah. Alumni as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then, so you guys said yes. And then I had to then tell my colleagues I had set up this meeting, which I mean, Julie's used to by now.
Yes.
But Jules, when I sent you this note for the program, and I think I probably sent you the link, you also, and Jenny, by the way, this is the response of every single person when I mention this to them. Right. So, Julie, tell me what your response was, because it was universal.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And yes, obviously, this is like a perfect match.
Yeah.
The alignment in terms of what we believe the power of improv is and the benefit it can have. And especially the idea of engaging girls at that stage in their growth and development to empower them and their voices.
Yeah. For so many reasons. So I want to dig into the meat of this, which is using improv for these young women. And before I toss it to you, Jenny, you know, for me, being a girl dad, I saw the it's not easy. And I saw my daughter was at Chicago Waldorf School and had some amazing teachers, women teachers, who came in and found a way to turn bullying and mean girling and all this other stuff around into kind of building an ensemble of women who then could sort of come together and sort of emerge and be very powerful voices for good. So let's start with you, Jenny, in terms of the program itself and just even foundationally, like, how did this emerge? What are the key sort of elements to it? And then I'll shift to Julie in terms of what we've, you know, because we just started this thing. So it's like, it's very early stages for us.
Well, you know, how much time do you have?
Yeah.
I love to talk about funny girls. I guess I'll back up just by saying the very well-documented research around the drop in confidence, right? This confidence gap that shows up between third and eighth grade. So about 8 years old to about 13 or 14. And, you know, girls who are full of vim and vigor, right, at eight, and then that slowly starts to winnow towards tweendom, stop raising their hands in class, they're not participating as much. Anyways, this, like, increased risk aversion, like the whole fear of failure, this pressure to be perfect. And so our goal is to squash the confidence gap. And we're like, how do you do that? And one way we think is cultivating a sense of voice and presence, right? And cue improv. Yeah. Julie can fill in those blanks as well. But there's no right or wrong, right? I mean, almost every contribution is valued. There's really no failure.
No mistakes.
Right. And so by kind of creating this safe space and allowing the girls to tap into like their innate abilities and as leaders, and then they can try on our leadership skills that we're focused on. So this affirmation of yes and is a huge confidence builder. So this was our approach to wanting to squash that confidence gap.
Julie, I mean, when you think about this, how much are you thinking about yourself?
Yes. No, it's very relatable. I was thinking about abundance when you were talking, Jenny, because that's one of the other pieces too that I think is such a gift to girls to really start to trust that you don't have limitations on how many good ideas you can have or how many opportunities you can have or how many people can have a voice in the room. And we really lean into teaching that that makes that pressure to be perfect diminish, that makes that that fear of putting yourself out there diminish, because you know it's not your one and only chance to do something or add something or be heard. And I think back to being in grad school, being in high school, and improv came into my life when I was in grade 9, so just after where this would have existed, and what it unlocked in terms of possibility, even fully outside of the process of being an improviser, right? In just all aspects of life, because you start to have that confidence, and it maps. You train the muscle memory when you're young, and then when you're older, you can come back to that when you're having uncertain moments.
It's interesting too. I've worked at Second City for so long, and it, you know, the misogyny is real. But I was also lucky enough to be here and in a leadership role when we had the first gender equal casts. And it is no coincidence that that group was Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, Rachel Dratch. And then you think about those Saturday Night Live casts where they went into there and there's Maya Rudolph. There's like, and it was just, and it was all we had to do was even the playing field. And suddenly there was no talk of women aren't funny. Thank you. No, not thank you, Christopher Hitchens. So I know. So I'm curious too, Jenny, in terms of the transformation that you've seen in the program prior to Second City getting involved, you know, how are you charting this transformation over time with the girls?
So we run, before our pilot with you, we run the program across the country, but with partners who are in schools and after school programs. And we have a survey that we have the students take at the beginning of the course as a baseline and at the end of the course. So we don't have a longitudinal connection with the students. So what we're tracking in the time that they've been exposed to the curriculum is their mastery of concept. So we are bringing up very specific core leadership skills that we name. And then we're also tracking their self-perception of themselves as leaders, right? It's very meta, but like, is that changing over the course of the participation in the class? And I will say, you know, it sounds hyperbolic, but I will say we are in the high 90% of our surveys of students saying like, oh my gosh, you know, I didn't think of myself as a leader. I mean, the Girl Scouts Research Institute did a study about 15 years ago. And they identified that nine out of 10 girls, I think it is, think that anyone can learn leadership skills, but only one in five think that they can do it, right? So wow. That disconnect was gut. And they just don't think of themselves as leaders. So this is what we have seen over the almost decade that we've been doing this program, is that it's that shift of, oh, I do have something to say. I do have a voice. So I'm not out here to say all the class presidents have run through funny girls. All the first chair in the orchestra are funny girls. Like it's how girls are identify in their own ways of how leadership looks like to them personally. But it's that idea of, oh, I have something to contribute.
Julie, when you first got the curriculum, I'm curious, like, did you look at it and go, oh, we can add here. Did you look at it and go, I can't believe this is so aligned? What was your sort of response?
Yeah, it was the alignment piece because it just fits hand in glove with our philosophical approach to improv. The pieces that were so wonderfully additive and something that our teachers have really responded to. We've got incredible teaching artists already in our world at the Second City. And they equivalently gravitated to the SEL language, the language about social emotional learning, mm-hmm. and sort of giving names to these things that we teach in sometimes a more esoteric way or with tiebacks to performance, but really mapping out the language of leadership and of awareness of self, awareness of others, like calling out those tools that we're already teaching in fun play curriculum. It's all the same work. But it has all these incredible outcomes. And I think our teachers have really relished getting to use that language for the work that they already are really familiar with.
Jenny, when you sent your colleague Jill, our friend, here to Second City to work with the teaching artists, I'm sure she was emailing you, but like, what were you hearing from her?
Sparkle ponies.
Literally.
Literally sparkle ponies. Like, oh my God, there's a whole stable full. Just so enthusiastic. Jill was so enthusiastic to work with your expert educators. And they, in turn, were so enthusiastic of the skill set that they have that they may not have coalesced into kind of a curricular format with this idea of outcome, particularly, you know, gender focused. And so Jill was like, they get it. They get the side coaching. They get how to give a gift in a scene. And they get how to kind of cultivate in the classroom. You know, there's room for the butterfly to do her monologue, but you got to get the bird in the corner to speak up too. And these teachers had that expertise.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I want to do a round robin. So I hope I'm not going to catch you off guard. And I'll include myself in this. And right. I hadn't thought about before. Like a favorite story. And it can be from the program. It could also be adjacent in terms of a young woman, you know, looking at doing this work and making a transformation to discovery, you know, anything. I'll think of it. Jenny, I'll go with you first because you have to have these stories from the years of doing it.
Yeah. I mean, where do I start? There's so many kids and we don't always hear it out of the kids' mouths. We hear it from the teachers or the educators or the guardians or the parents who say things like when they see the showcase performance that we have, they say, I never heard her like this. I didn't know that was in her. And I can, you know, single out particular students, but I really think that the sum total is this just kind of seismic shift of what it's doing for the girls in the program of a sense of self. So they're still unique. They're still on their own, charting their own path. But as a whole, this idea of like, oh, I'm worthy. I'm worthy of my peers. I'm worthy to speak up. So, I mean, I can tell you all kinds of funny anecdotes of games and things happening in the classroom, but I will say like the most impressive part is those kids as a whole shifting their sense of selves.
That's great. Julie, you got one?
Not from the Funny Girls program directly. Okay. This is our first season, and we're still, we're just embarking on our second unit of our first season with Funny Girls. But I came up through an organization here in Canada called the Canadian Improv Games, and as a national high school improv tournament, and through that organization, got to watch so many incredible young women just flourishing, and then attributing all this credit to the games and what that experience was for them when really it was all them. They had done all of the doing. I think of, she's now a friend of mine, Kari Leslie, who is a student in high school going through this program, who would not have finished high school had it not imbued her with the confidence. And then we looked at her and how many girls looked to her as the epitome of a poised, accomplished, dynamic, cool, intelligent person. And for her, she didn't see it until she had a place to be herself, and it gave her a reason to keep showing up at school. And again, the games didn't do that for her. She did that for her. But I think that's not an uncommon story for girls getting to improvise in an environment that truly supports them and lets them be themselves.
Yeah, that's perfect. That builds on mine. So I mentioned that. So both of my kids went to Chicago Waldorf schools. And for those who don't know the Waldorf schools, very aligned with all the things we're talking about, a sense of play. Their slogan right now, because I drive by the building all the time, is more social, less media. Like I say, like, you know, and all the teachers knew us because Nick, who's older than Nora, they knew about Second City and improv, and we had done some workshops or whatever. And then, so Nora's class was rough and because of the girls. And Carol Trigiano, who's actually been on the podcast, had Anne come in and do a workshop for them, an improv workshop for them. And it was so, and Nora was into it, like, so that was good because she could have been mortified. but the girls like got it, and then they wanted to talk to Anne, and that became they loved Anne. And it was like, it's the same thing you were talking about, Julie, where it's like, and I'm going to tell you this, my wife does not see herself as like anywhere near cool. That is not
like, of course she wouldn't, but we all know she is.
Yeah, I know. But that's part of this, right? Which is like, it's, you know, when you can figure out what the girls need to know, and frankly, everyone needs to know, imposter syndrome is real. These people that you think are, you know, just skating through life, it is hard for them. And some of the most successful, Renee Fleming has been very open about her stage fright. Tina Fey, not an easy life. And these are all wonderful, accomplished, great people. But it is no guarantee that, you know, that they've struggled. They've struggled throughout. And I think what appealed to me immediately about this was that little bit of boost that you can get. And the reason it works so effectively to me is because it's a skill that is practiced. It's not just a thing you read in a book. Because Jenny, I don't, like, you didn't do improv before you got involved, right?
Not in this way, no.
You knew about it?
So, I trained as a classical musician, and you know, that a lot of that is like you're executing what's on the page. So in order to loosen up a little bit, I had taken some musical improvisation, but nothing using comedy.
Oh, but talk to me about that, because I know when we worked with the Lyric Opera, it was very liberating to them, because their work was very much like, you either do it, it's right or it's wrong. And we're like, well, here, everything you do is right. And they're like, wait, what?
Yeah, 100%. I took an intro class at the Magnet Theater here in New York City, which was fantastic. I just loved their flavor of improv. And when I first went in, it was alternately terrifying, liberating, thrilling, because my kind of professional life was executing. You know, it's the oboe tunes the orchestra at 440 hertz. I don't know what Chicago is. Maybe they're 441. But you tune the orchestra. There's a lot of responsibility. There's a lot of specificity. It's, you know, you are not messing up notes in concerts. There's a high level of application of your skill. So to go into an environment and the skill was basically letting loose. Yeah. Or being super responsive, super in the moment. Like, I wasn't practicing the skit or the scene I was going to do in class the same way that I would practice a sonata, concerto, an etude, whatever. So it was, like I said, it was alternately liberating and terrifying at the same time.
Yeah, there's no safety net. But also, you know, there's a very Buddhist analogy of letting go, and, you know, and riding and flow and all those other things. Julie, when you first started doing this, like, you know, you had to have the same, you know, equation of terror and liberation.
Yeah, for sure I did. To not have a script, but to go out and potentially fail every time you open your mouth is super scary. Mm-hmm. It's not a solo art form. That's the other beautiful thing. And it's another really wonderful aspect of teaching leadership this way. We think of leadership as very much about the individual in a prominent role. It's not. It's in conversation and in support of others. It's very much about ensemble. And it's the same. There are solo improvisers, and they're impressive and magnificent. But the majority of the improv you do is going to be in partnership with one or more scene partners, and you're looking out for each other. I mean, I grew up in a sort of Keith Johnstone school of improv, where the first thing we learned is your only job is to make your scene partner look good. And that takes so much pressure off, because if I'm just worried about you and taking care of you, which that sort of nurture mentality is not a foreign one for me, that's a really easy job. I don't have to think about me at all. And I know you've got me, which is the got your back thing that we say a lot in improvisation too. You're looking out for each other, and so you don't have to be scared.
And that's huge in middle school. I mean, like you were saying, middle school could be rough, man. Mm-hmm. And that idea of being super vulnerable is super scary. right? But we find through this program, maybe the second or third class in, it really starts to build that camaraderie and sorority, and that whole idea that Julie was saying about affirmation is enormous. That is very different rhetoric than social media affirmation, right? That kind of binary like, don't like. But this idea that you just, they have your back. So if you're going to be playful and vulnerable, you don't, the dynamic is not someone saying you're not a unicorn or you're not, you know, that koala hanging in the tree. Like, they agree with it. And that feeling is incredible for any age. But I will say, when this confidence gap is showing up and the girls have the B-roll in the back of their mind thinking, oh my God, if I say that thing, it's so stupid, everyone's going to laugh for the wrong reasons. Or if I raise my hand too soon, I don't want to seem too smart. You know, all of that chatter is just the affirmation of improv. And Funny Girls is such a warm hug.
I have not talked to Julie about this, but our corporate overlords at ZMC were here for the last 2 days, and we don't get to talk to them as much as we did in the old days, because we have a CEO now, Ed Wells, and he handles a lot of that. And so these guys want to come in and check in with us, and so I was talking to the sort of main guy who we work with, and he goes, so what's different now in that you know, we changed leadership, you know, a couple of years back and all that. And I had an observation that came to me in the moment. And what came to me in the moment is that sort of previous leadership here was interested in discipline, but didn't quite know how to apply it, was interested in freedom, but was very scared of it. And what I said is, what we have now is someone who understands that discipline and freedom go together. And he liked that. And I was like, and that's the leadership I see. And so to what we're kind of talking about before, improv is, and people I think misunderstand this, it's not just like you just do anything and suddenly it works. It creates, there is incredible discipline in order to be free. And in order to be free requires a real disciplined approach. So that this shows up in the leadership books that I read and the science around leadership now, because it's the whole top-down mentality, like you know, command and control. That is a thing of the past. Talk to anyone who is hiring in their businesses today, and they miss it because they felt somehow they were in control, but they never were. So we're still all getting used to it. But what I love about the program is that you're ahead of that curve. These girls are ahead of that curve.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, I like the idea of having to be very disciplined, you know, for it to run well. But I'll also say, you know, when we start the program, Funny Girls, which is, it's not a misnomer, but we are not teaching them to be funny, right? We're teaching them to, again, be present and use their voice. And when we're introducing what is improv, we play pet peeve rant, which you both know well, but for some of your audience, if they don't, pet peeve rant is you have a group of folks and you choose one thing that irritates you about partner, school, pet, work, whatever it is. And then you start saying, you know, my husband, every time he washes his face, like the entire sink is covered in water. And then the teacher puts me on hold and cues the next person who says, I really hate it when people are, you know, clipping their fingernails on the subway. And then the instructor cues everyone at the same time. And everyone is like really getting bigger and bigger into their pet peeve. And the teacher brings it to a close and says, and you just did improv and didn't know it. So that idea of, you know, yes, it's disciplined, but also pulling on your own lived experience is such a fertile bag.
Yeah, it's funny because I just wrote an article for Forbes Leadership Council, and I mentioned that when my wife is teaching and they're not improvising well, she reminds them or asks them to include one or two true things about themselves.
Yeah.
And inevitably that becomes a scene. Yeah. Okay, so in a moment, I'm going to ask you for your yes and story, so get ready for that. Before we do that, it's 10 years from now. What's your ideal? Where's the partnership ideally?
Julie, do you want to go first? You want me to go first?
You go. This is your baby. I want to be watching. I mean,
getting funny girls to as many girls as we can. Chicago, Toronto, and beyond, right? At a super pivotal time in their social and emotional development, like full stop. Yep. But also, you know, doing a follow-up research study on the confidence gap and found that it's gone missing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that would be so nice. I would love for us to be hand in hand with you rolling this out to so many more schools. I greedily want to see it come up here north of the border. I'd love to see this roll out in Canadian schools. I think it would be very well received. So I hope we continue matchmaking incredible teaching artists and improvisers to schools that need this.
Yeah.
And this is a philanthropic investment also for us of, you know, feeding that pipeline for women's leadership. So
right. This,
it has, you know, dividends beyond dividends beyond dividends.
So when I think about it, you know, we're working with the University of Chicago Crime Lab, and we're working with law enforcement, and the numbers are fantastic in terms of crime is down, despite what all of you have heard at a federal level. Crime is at its lowest here in like decades, and the reception to improv for these folks has been off the charts. And I have hopes for that. For this program, though, I would love it to be in every Chicago public school. I think you could and I think that would. I don't mean this lightly. You could transform the city. It's an incredible city. It's got its problems, but it's also like it's produced so much in terms of art and comedy and music and culture. I think it could really what a gift to give to future generations when we seem to be handing down problems. I would like to hand down solutions. So that's mine.
I bet 10 years from now we have girls who are in the program with us this year teaching in the program.
Yeah.
That would be a real joy to see.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to ask each of you for a yes and story to close us out. Julie, I'm going to start with you.
I hope I don't get this wrong. I'm going to go back to when I was in grade 9. There was a call posted for the drama club, and I didn't get into a drama class. I'd messed up my schedule. I was taking art, and I didn't know any kids in that room when I stood at the door. And I looked, and I went, nope, this is not going to be a thing. I am not doing this. And I walked halfway down the hall, and then I turned around, and I went, yes, going to do this, stepped in, and the and part is the whole rest of my life, because if in that moment I had chickened out and shut down and not left myself open to possibility and to the incredible people I met in that room, I wouldn't be doing improv and I wouldn't have become addicted to improv and its incredible joyful power. I wouldn't be here at Second City now. Every friend I have, every relationship, it all started with choosing to say yes and then accept the big and that came after.
Oh, I love that. Jenny, what's your yes and story?
I guess I was thinking about this. I guess I would circle back to how I got my first job as grants manager at the Harnish Foundation. This was maybe in 1999. And a friend in business school connected me to Ruth Ann Harnish, who was looking for someone to be her grants manager. And she was looking for the story of one, is what she called it. So in looking at the different projects and organizations that she had supported to find the story of one person whose trajectory, you know, had been changed by her support. And at the time, I was working as a classical freelance oboist in New York City. And in our interview, she said to me, you're a highly trained musician, but what makes you, you know, qualified to do this job in a totally different field? And rather than freaking out and kind of being, you know, deer in headlights, I said, yeah, I'm a musician. I'm used to working with others in super specific ways. And I'm extremely attuned to nuance. And I'm an excellent listener. And I execute with precision and personality. I'll find that story of one. Mm-hmm. And she hired me, and the rest is history.
Oh, I love that so much. I love a freelance oboist, as one does. And I know you're not telling us you were a spy, but clearly you were also a spy. How do people get involved with this? What do they need to do? Where can they find information?
So we have a dedicated website, funnygirls.org/secondcity, and that will give you details around this partnership. And if you're a school or an after-school program who's interested in participating, you can find information there. And like we said, we're in the pilot phase of this, and we are looking for more partners in Chicago in particular. But we do run the program with a slightly different model in all different parts of the country. We're also just starting a partnership in Perth, Australia. So anyways, you can find information at funnygirls.org/secondcity.
All right. We should also tell them how much it costs, because that's an important thing.
Well, at present, absolutely nothing.
Crickets.
This is a free program, people.
It's a free program. The Harnish Foundation is so honored to be underwriting this. But it is in partnership with Second City and all of your gifts and contributions as well. But this is a free program to under-resourced schools who could really benefit, their students could really benefit from this. And we say Funny Girls, it's open to girls and non-binary, whoever wants to be in the room. But we are uniquely focused on providing this experience for girls.
Yeah. So go to the website. All the information is there. Apply. We need you to, get the kids there. We need a place for this, but it doesn't cost anything. And the rewards are incredible. When my wife had essentially Julie's job here in Chicago, she used to run the orientation, and she would say, so these are the people who are just coming to their first class. And she goes, this work is going to change your life. And she said that without any sort of, it's not boasting, it's not anything. It's going to change your life. Jenny Raymond, Julie DeMay Osborne, thank you for coming on the pod.
Thank you so much, Kelly. Really fun.
Getting DS And is produced by Second City Works and WGN Radio. Our editor is Iridian Fierro from WGN. We get support at the Second City from Emma Smith and Colleen Fahey. For more information about the Second City, you can go to www.secondcity.com, or you can email us directly at works@secondcity.com.